Okay, we'll be in Job 39 this morning. I will begin by reading it. Knowest thou the time when the wild goats of the rock bring forth? Or can you mark when the hinds do calve? Can you number the months that they fulfill? Or do you know the time when they bring forth? They bow themselves, they bring forth their young ones, they cast out their sorrows. Their young ones are in good liking, they grow up with corn, they go forth, not, they return not to them. Who has sent out the wild ass free, or who has loosed the bands of the wild ass? Whose house I have made the wilderness and the barren land his dwellings. He scorns the multitude of the city, neither regardeth he the crying of the driver. The range of the mountains is his pasture, and he searches after every green thing. Will the unicorn be willing to serve you or abide by thy crib? Canst thou bind the unicorn with his band in the furrow, or will he harrow the valleys after you? Wilt you trust him because his strength is great, or will you leave thy labor to him? Wilt you believe him that he will bring home thy seed and gather it into thy barn? Gavest thou the goodly wings to the peacocks, or wings and feathers to the ostrich, which leaves her eggs in the earth and warms them in dust, and forgets that the foot may crush them and that the wild beast may break them? She is hardened against her young ones as though they were not hers. Her labor is in vain without fear, because God has deprived her of wisdom, neither has he imparted to her understanding. What time she lifts up herself on high, she scorns the horse and his rider. Hast thou given the horse strength? Have you closed his neck with thunder? Canst thou make him afraid of the grass as a grasshopper? The glory of his nostrils is terrible. He paws in the valley and rejoices in his strength. He goes on to meet the armed men. He mocks at fear and is not affrighted. Neither turns he back from the sword. The quiver rattled against him, the glittering spear in the shield. He swallows the ground with fierceness and rage. Neither believes he that it is the sound of the trumpet. He saith among the trumpets, Ha! Ha! And he smells the battle afar off, the thunder of the captains and the shouting. Does the hawk fly by your wisdom and stretch her wings toward the south? Does the eagle soar up at thy command and make her nest on high? She dwells and abides on the rock, upon the crag of the rock and the strong place. From there she seeks the prey, and her eyes behold afar off. Her young ones also suck up blood, and where the slain are, there she is. Okay? So back into the first verse again. We know now by reading this that the Lord answered Job in starting with verse chapter 38, verse 1. And this is a reproof that God is giving to Job. If you know so much, let me just ask you some questions. It's a continuation, chapter 39. Okay? So we go on and understand that this is a continuation of chapter 38. It should have all been together, but that's just the way it's been separated. And due to the longevity of it, it's easier to teach if we break it down a little bit. Okay? So back to 39:1. He's saying, do you know the time when the wild goats of the rock bring forth? Do you know when they're going to have the young ones? Does anybody know that? I don't think we do. They do it on their... by nature, God has already programmed it. We didn't, so we don't know. He said, can you mark when the hinds or the deer do cast their calves? When they have their little fawns. We don't know what day they're going to have them, do we? We can get ballpark something, but we don't know what day they bred, so we don't know what day they're going to come forth. God's in control of all that. He said, they bow themselves, they bring forth their young ones. And the King James says they cast out their sorrows, but it's not a good rendering of the language. It should say they get rid of their labor pains. By having their kid, their babies, they don't have any more labor pains, do they? So they get rid of their labor pains. Their young ones are in good liking. Literally, it should say they are healthy and strong. They grow up with corn. If you know anything about the Bible was written in 16th century English here. But you know what? In the culture of this Bible, in the Jewish time, there was no corn in their culture. So what the language should say here, and what it does say here in the Hebrew, is it says they grow up with grain standing in the field. They eat the grain just growing wild in the fields. Does that make sense? Where would these animals get their food, since there's no one cultivating them, is there? Correct? Job is the oldest book of the Bible. So guess what? Back then, there was nobody cultivating grain for the crops for the people, was there? The animals just eat wild grain, okay? They go forth and return not to them. They say, and their young ones grow up, and that's the process of these wild animals. They grow up and go off and start their own families, don't they? They just grow up and they go on. They don't have to come back. They're not attached like human beings are to each other. Verse 5, he goes on and says, who has sent out the wild ass free? And the next little word, or, literally means this: free of the halter and restraint. Who has loosed the halter and restraints of the wild ass? Who sent him out that way? It's God. All he's doing, he's questioning Job, and he's questioning you. Who did all this stuff before you got here? Who set all this stuff up? He's trying to make you understand with your own thinking, I didn't do any of this stuff, so what do I really know? Okay? What do I really know compared to God? How arrogant is it when we think as human beings that we've accomplished some great thing? God has prepared our lives for us. He's done everything for us. So why should we get caught up in arrogance and pride about being, oh, I've done some great thing? God gave us the ability to do that. So all the credit should go back to God for everything. We shouldn't get caught up in anything about, look what I've done, because it's not about I. That's the ego of man, and we don't need to go there. Okay? Verse 6 goes on and said, whose house I have made the wilderness or the desert, and the barren land or the salt land, his grave. That's what the language says. The salt land, his grave. In the salt land, there's no fresh water to drink, so guess what's going to happen? Anything goes there, it's going to die. He scorns the noise of the city. Not the multitude, but the noise of the city. Neither hears he the shouting of the taskmaster. That's what the language actually says. Neither hears he the shouting of the taskmaster. When this wild ass that's loose, does he listen to someone trying to make him do something? Wild ass don't listen to nobody. They do what they want. And see, the book says that we are wild. The wild ass nature is in man. We are made just like this wild ass. We're rebellious. We do things that we want to do. We don't want to listen to God. We don't want to listen to what's right. We want to do what we think is right. Isn't that the nature of humanity? Come on, that's what God's showing us. And if we can identify this nature in us, that it's that same wild ass nature that's free and running and doing what it wants, guess what? If we identify it, now we can deal with it. But as long as I identify that wild ass nature as just being who I am, guess what? I'm going to protect that nature and say it's perfectly all right to do that thing, aren't I? But as soon as I identify it and know that this is not the thing God's called me to be, I'm to be a lamb, just like he was. Correct? If he was a lamb, guess what we're supposed to be? A lamb. I'm not the wild ass. I used to be. I was called that a lot too. The range of the mountains is his pasture, and he searches for every green herb. Will the unicorn, or literally the wild bulls or the oxes, be willing to serve you or abide in your stalls? You really think these wild animals are going to sit in the stalls? Why do you think the churches today keep building these things, trying to get people in, but they won't stay in? Because it's that wild-ass nature in them. It's that wild beast nature in humanity that does not want to be controlled and manipulated. And see, God can use that as a good thing. He can walk you into these places so you can see that it's not God. Because God doesn't control and manipulate you like that. He wants you to come to Him for one reason. You love Him. It's the only reason God draws you to Him. The book even says this: we loved Him because He first loved us. Not because He's threatened and intimidated us. We go to him because he loved us. Look what he's provided for us. Do you think someone would provide everything he provided for us in our lives if they didn't love us? If God was angry and mad at us, do you think he'd provide what he's provided, Tom? See, he's already provided all this wonderful life for us. Everything. And how could I even think that he doesn't love me? Because we listen to the wrong voice in our head. Okay? Verse 10, can you bind the wild boars of the ox by a rope in the furrow? Can you take the wild ox and make him plow the fields for you? See, you can't take this beast nature and make it do anything for you. The best thing you can do to the wild beast, you know what it is? Hang it up and gut it out. Butcher it for food. That's the best thing I can do with a wild beast. It's food supply, isn't it? It's not going to do anything to help me. Not the wild beast. We're not really talking about wild animals. Really, in a sense, he's using them as an analogy. That's what he's telling you. So he's using all these things. It's symbolism. He's setting everything up. Or will he harrow the valleys after you? Is he going to plow when you're gone? I don't think so. Even if you hem him up and make him do something, he's only doing it because you're forcing him to do it. Do you think he's going to do it just because you've trained him how to do it, he's going to continue to do it the rest of his life? You think if you trained an ox to plow, if you turned him loose, you think he'd go find a plow and hitch up to it and start dragging it everywhere? It's not going to happen. He's going back to his beast nature. And that's what we do when we're disconnected from the truth of God. We go back and hitch up that plow and that hard taskmaster, our mind, goes right back to work on us and drags us right down in that valley of slime again. It just happens. Will you trust him because his strength is great and leave your labor to him? Will you trust him because his strength is great? The natural man is a strong thing. The spiritual man's a stronger thing in another way. Because everything in the natural man is controlled by brute strength. But the spiritual man is controlled by perfect knowledge. And knowledge will outdo strength every time. Knowledge will always win out. Knowledge and wisdom will always win out over brute strength. Verse 12 goes on and says, will you trust him that he will return your seed and gather it into the threshing floor? Do you think that beast nature is going to do it all for you? The beast nature, the ego of man, the I, who's he concerned with? Why do you think so many church systems fail? Because they put a man in charge or a woman in charge who is only concerned with the I. Right? If I can get mine, you're all just here to supply my needs. And that's not what it is. God said he gave gifts unto humanity. He gave a gift to humanity. It's called apostle, prophet, evangelist, pastors who teach. Okay? That's a gift. I'm not here to take. I'm here to give. That's my purpose. I'm here to give. And if I give, I've done my job. I'll give whatever God's given me to give. That's what I give. I'm not counting on somebody else to do it for me. I'm counting on God to take care of it. He's the master, and I serve him, and he'll take care of me. He comes back in verse 13 and said, did you give the wings to the peacocks, or literally the ostrich? That's what it should say. And the language says, I don't know why they put peacock, because it says ostrich. Yeah. That kind of stuff blows my mind, how they can read that word and put something else in there, but they did.
What is it?
The word peacock should be ostrich. He said, did you give wings to the ostrich or wings and feathers to the... And then when it put ostrich, you know what it should be? Stork. Does the New King James have it? Yeah. Okay. It should be this way. Did you give wings to the ostrich or wings and feathers to the stork? That's what it should say. Which leave their eggs in the earth and warm them in the dust... Guess what? They're not trusting anything. They don't really have any drawing. Those birds don't have a drawing to protect their nests like people, like other animals do. That's that beast nature in them. He said, who gave them this nature? And they forget or ignore that the foot may crush them, or the wild beast may break them or eat them or consume them. She is hardened, or literally unfeeling, towards her young ones as though they were not hers. Her labor is in vain without concern. She just goes through the natural desire to lay the eggs, hatch them out, and just walks off and forgets about them. They take care of themselves. That's pretty amazing, isn't it? Who made this person, this bird, to be like that? God did all these things. So if we're not doing all them things, who's the smart one? It's surely not humanity, is it? Because God has deprived her, okay, or allowed her to be deprived of wisdom. Neither has he imparted to her understanding. He made her a big dumb bird. There's a lot of big dumb birds running around, ain't there? Verse 18, when she flaps her wings high in the air, she mocks the horse and the rider. She's not afraid of anything. The big old birds, they're pretty mean, really. Have you given the horse strength? Have you clothed the neck with a mane? That's what it should say. I don't know why he put thunder there, because the Hebrew language says a mane, like a horse's mane. Did you make him to leap as a grasshopper? Not afraid, but to leap as a grasshopper? The grandeur of his nostrils is frightful. He's saying all these things and statements, and he's trying to make Job see something. Job, if you didn't do these things, what did you do? Can you read that in there? If he's asking Job all these questions, what do you think he's really saying? Job, what did you really do? What did you have to do with the scheme of this life, or with this world, or the creation of all things? He paws his horse. He paws in the valley and rejoices in his strength. He goes on to meet armed men. He mocks at fear and is not dismayed. Neither turns he back from the presence of the sword. You know, that don't frighten the beast, does it? They don't have the knowledge to be afraid. The quiver rattles against him, and the lance or the javelin and the shield. Okay? The gleaming spear and the shield, rather, I should say. Rattle against him, the gleaming spear and the lance or the javelin. He swallows the ground with fierceness and rage, neither believing he that it is the sound of the shofar. Shofar was the horn they sounded for alarm to let you know what was going on. Do you think the beast nature is really concerned with what's going on? They're only concerned with certain little things like, if I'm hungry, or am I comfortable, do I need a drink, place to lay down? Isn't that the beast nature? That's all they're concerned with. Food, safety, and reproduction, that's all they're concerned with. You know, it's a place they feel safe at. And isn't that the nature of humanity? If we're belly's full, we're not thirsty, and we're in a nice, comfortable place, we're pretty contented, aren't we? That's just the way the beast nature is. He says among verse 25, he says, enough of the trumpets, enough of the shofar. Don't mean anything to him. And he smells the battle afar off, and the thunder of the captains, and the battle cry. Does the hawk fly by your understanding? Did you give the hawk the ability to fly? Remember, you can take Job's name out here and put your name in it. Did we do these things? I don't think so. And stretch her wings toward the south? Does the eagle soar up at your command and make her nest upon high? Did he? Does the eagle do that because you told him? She dwells and abides on the rock. Now, I know we could talk about a big rock on the mountain, but see, everything that lives abides by the rock. The rock is Christ, isn't it? 1 Corinthians chapter 10 said that rock that followed them through the desert was Christ. He is the rock. upon the pointed rock and the stronghold. The pointed rock, a stronghold. When you get up on top of the rock of a real high place, what can really bother you? Nothing. You're in a safe place. And when we in our lives get up on that high tower rock of Christ, what can really bother us? In Isaiah it said there's a highway, or literally should say there's a higher way, where the lion can't walk and the vulture can't fly. Wonder what he's talking about. That highway, that high rock, that place that we can elevate to in the Feast of Tabernacles, the third day, the Star Covenant, where the beast nature cannot dwell in the heavenlies, can it? The heavenlies speak of the spirit realm. And when we ascend into the spirit realm, we leave the dust and sand covenants behind us and step into that Star Covenant. No longer can we be tormented by those creatures of the earth. The serpent. What's the serpent's food in the Bible? The dust of the earth. Well, if we've ascended into the heavenlies, guess what's not in the heavenlies? There's no dust. That means you've left that baggage behind you in the earth. Correct? Why do you think it showed that the Jews walked through the desert in all that dust and sand and dirt that they were in? But when they come to Jerusalem, that high place where the three mountains was, guess what? They didn't have that problem anymore. They went to a higher place, that next realm, see, that elevated place. And when we get in there, you don't have the problems you had out there. Now the problems are not external any longer. Guess where they are? They're internal. When we come into the heavenly realm, now is when God starts doing heart surgery on you. When you're walking in Passover and Pentecost, it's all the external pointing fingers at somebody. It's always somebody else's fault. But you know what? When you come into the tabernacle of God and realize literally you are the tabernacle of God, it says the house, the cleaning starts, and it first begins where? At the tabernacle of God. The cleaning is going to start in you. And when you come to this realm and understand this, it's time for you to get cleaned up, not about somebody else's problem. I don't care what anybody else does, it's not concerning me in my life. That's why I don't have to worry about control and manipulation of people. If I get myself right and someone else chooses not to, whose concern is that? It's their concern, isn't it? They've got to do it themselves. I have to walk mine out, walk out our own salvation, our own deliverance with fear and respect of God, with reverence and respect of God. That's all I've got to do. God never told anybody to go out there and save the world, did he? You know why? He already took care of it. It's already done. He took care of it. Well, I don't see it. That's okay. God still took care of it. I don't care whether you got the eyes to see it or not. God took care of it. Okay? Verse 29. From there she seeks the prey, and her eyes scan afar off. Her young ones also pluck up blood where the slain are. There is she. So she's looking for a fresh hole. God put it in her nature to go after the blood. Doesn't the book say the life is in the blood? So this wild beast, this bird of prey, as beautiful and grand as she is still a wild beast, isn't she? All these beautiful animals are gifts, just like the crocodile hunter in Australia. He played with animals he shouldn't have played with. You know, I hate that the man died, a young man with children and everything, but that happens every day to other people all over the world. So why is he any different than anybody else? God's no respecter of persons, and we shouldn't be either. I don't want to see anybody hurt. But when you tempt God and you play with these animals that you shouldn't be playing with and try to make people think that you're greater than you are, it will come back and bite you. He had many, many near misses, many, many bites with venomous snakes that he shouldn't have been playing with. You could film them without playing with them. And, you know, he got too close, and it cost his life. If he had to do over again, I bet you he'd have a different view of it now. Too late, but, you know, that's the way it is. It's amazing what God has set up. But know this, this isn't the end yet. We've still got a few more chapters to go to get into this book of Job, this book of your life. Okay, just a few more chapters. But yet, right here in these two chapters, last 38 and 39, These two chapters, God is reproving Job and making him think. He's asking you, as well as Job, what did you have to do with all this creation? And there's another answer to it I'm not going to give you yet. We'll get that later.